Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. One of the greatest things about real estate is the ability to leverage. You can get a loan to acquire the property, which is an awesome thing. Today, we're going to talk with two lenders to give us the state of the union on real estate financing, both residential and commercial, today on the Real Estate Guys radio program. Are you achieving everything you want in life? What if there was a time-tested way to ensure that 2015 is your best year yet? The most successful people in life set goals and keep themselves accountable. But how? The good news is that it's not rocket science. You too can learn the skills and unleash the motivation that will create success in your life. And now is the time. Hi, this is Robert Helms, and I'd like to personally invite you to attend Creating Your Future, the 2015 Goals Retreat, January 9th to 11th in beautiful San Diego, California. This unique weekend event has been called phenomenal, inspirational, and life-changing by the hundreds of people that have attended. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com and click on events or call 888-489-7723, extension 18. Get your life back on track, physically, spiritually, and financially. Attend the 2015 Goals Retreat on the second weekend of the new year. Click events at realestateguysradio.com. This is no dress rehearsal. Live the life you were meant to. Visit realestateguysradio.com or call 888-489-7723, extension 18, today. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program, and welcome to December. I'm your host, Robert Helms. Joining me, financial strategist, co-host Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
We are here to talk about an awesome topic, the topic of lending. Back in the day when you were in the lending business, we had our pulse on what was happening in lending. Today, not so much.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, I mean, I still pay attention. I'm on all the news feeds. I pay attention to the newsletters. I look at the loan program solicitations. A lot of people in the business, in the wholesale side of the business, people that supply money to people in the brokerage business, still have me on their mailing lists. And so I get a chance to see the new products when they come out and kind of the trends. And the more I see people pursuing money, I understand that money is getting easier. But that's a lot different than actually originating loans on a day-in, day-out basis, dealing with the nuances of underwriting standards, hearing the pitches from the loan reps that are coming out, talking about their new products, and really understanding what it takes to get deals done. And just a little sidebar about how and why I got into the real estate mortgage business. And originally, there were two sides. One is, and I've said this a few times in the past, I felt like it was going to be a great business to be in because the baby boomer cycle was putting boomers to a point where they were going to be purchasing more bonds than they were stocks. And that would mean there would be money available in the mortgage business and rates would be low. And that part I got completely right, and it was great. The second thing, and probably one of the main things, was I was really enamored of other people's money and how could I get into the inside. And it's a technique you and I have used for a long time. When there's a business that we're interested in learning something about, you can make a little investment and then all of a sudden you're on the inside, right? It's how you get started in the development business. I'm interested in development rather than go start a development business where you don't know anything. Invest in a development and then pay attention to what's going on and use the opportunity as an insider to learn. Well, I wanted to do that in the mortgage business. I wanted to know the tricks of the trade. How do I get loans done? And of course, the net result of that is I ended up acquiring millions and millions and millions of dollars in debt over that period of time because I knew how to play the game. And it was great. But the game has changed. And as a real estate investor, your mission, I think, I hope, in the face of what's going on economically, is to try to accumulate as much debt that you can acquire offsetting assets to debt service with the income streams. That's the essence of what makes real estate so exciting, the arbitrage between the cost of the money and the income on the property. But in order to do that, you've got to know the business. So either you're going to be in the business like I was, or you're going to have great team members that are professionals that have done what they do. And the thing that's great about what happened in the mortgage business is a lot of people flushed out. The people who weren't really pros, the people who, you know, went from hot industry to hot industry. The guy was selling cars and said, hey, mortgage is hot. I'm going to go originate mortgages. That's a lot different from a guy that's been doing the business for a long time and has been through all the ups and downs. And I think we need to have more professionalism in the mortgage business. I think the net of the cleansing of the Great Recession has been the mortgage business is probably better than it's ever been in terms of the quality of the people that are in it.
Absolutely it is. And that's one of the great side benefits is the also-rans are out of the game. Now, as a real estate investor, it's critical that you understand leverage. Leverage is a two-edged sword. Leverage can be the greatest thing. It amplifies return, but leverage is also a quick way to lose control of a property. So you need to understand it. And you need to operate as kind of the quarterback of the team. You need to know enough about the way mortgages work to be able to vet deals and decide when proper leverage is going to be used. But it's not your job to keep up with every single loan program, where interest rates are, what qualification looks like, how changes happen in the market. You need a mortgage person on your side to do that.
One of the things I did when I was in the mortgage business was position myself as a financial strategist as opposed to getting buried in the tactical aspects of the loan business. So I actually hired a product manager, and that person's job was to interview the wholesale loan reps and stay up to date on the loan programs and work with the underwriters. And that was kind of a unique organization in the mortgage business, but it freed me up to concentrate more on how to use the loan product strategically as opposed to just get the loan done or how it worked. And I would argue that as a real estate investor, you're going to get loan people who are very good at the tactical aspects of getting the loan done. They know what it takes to push it through. What you're going to want to do is learn how to use the product strategically to create financial results. And that's a bigger topic than today's show, but it's something you can put on your wish list in terms of things that you're going to want to get good at as a real estate investor, because managing your portfolio of debt effectively against the income streams of the assets and the equity growth that they control is going to be a very, very important part of your career as a real estate investor.
So we first met our guest today on a Real Estate Guys field trip to the Dallas-Fort Worth market, and we're really impressed by not only his knowledge, but the fact that he'd been in business a long time. Grant Parham's been a lender for more than 17 years. He specializes in investor loans. So he'll make the occasional loan to a homeowner, but his primary emphasis is on investors and the type of products that they need and what they're trying to accomplish. So when we come back, you're going to meet Grant Parham today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Forbes rated Memphis the best cash flow market in the nation. And our good friend Terry Kerr at Mid-South Homebuyers has been the premier turnkey rental property provider in Memphis for over 13 years. With an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, Terry has renovated over 750 houses. Real Estate Guys listeners have snapped up hundreds. Discover what these satisfied investors already know. Mid-South's properties are completely renovated with a one-year warranty and a lifelong rental guarantee. They're affordable, well-managed, and easy to own. Perfect for beginning investors and veterans alike. Get in on the action. Contact Terry and his team via email at midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Kim Kiyosaki. I'm the author of Rich Woman, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station, all the time at realestateguysradio.com. This week, an important topic, getting the financing you need for investment property, and I'd like to introduce you to our first guest today, Mr. Grant Parham. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Robert. Thanks for having me on board.
It's great to see you again. We got together first a few years back,
yeah.
And it's great to reconnect. And, of course, what was impressive from the beginning was the fact that what you spend most of your time doing is helping investors find loans, not just homeowners find loans. So tell us how you got into the investment property side of the business.
Well, I've been doing loans, I guess, since 1997. Probably the year of 2000 is when some of the refinance boom came around, and I got hooked up with a real estate investor out of California. He had about close to 400 doors and kept refinancing big chunks of properties for him. And the word spread, and next thing you know, all these people calling me up to refinance their mortgages. And next thing you know, probably 2004, I look back and I'm probably 90% of my business was dealing with investors. And quite frankly, I like doing that because the investors are, they're professional. I mean, we're not dealing with, and don't take this wrong, you know, housewives that are worried about curtains or flooring that may not suit her purposes, because everything that the investors are working on, this, it's all numbers. It's all on paper. And if I can satisfy their financial piece, then, you know, everybody's happy.
Well, another little nuance of that, of course, is an investor, if taken care of well, will buy more than one.
Yes, right? They will. Yes, they will.
That's part of what we'll talk about today. So, you know, you've seen it change, right? When you got into the business, it was probably more like it is today. People actually had to qualify. Then we had all that crazy loose lending stuff. And then, of course, the downturn. Paint a picture for us, if you would, Graham, about kind of the state of the lending world today.
Well, needless to say, the downturn in 2008 gave us a big, huge knee jerk. A lot of the lenders that were participating in the Alt-A paper or the subprime paper, you know, they're long gone. The crazy programs that we referred to, Heartbeat and a Signature, and those are all gone. But quite frankly, the type of clientele that I work with, they were all 20% down, fully documented loans. Good credit, good earnings, everything was all good. They were serious investors. Rarely did I work with, you know, a lot of the investors that wanted, were kind of wannabes. There's a lot of them out there, but then again, they just can't foot the bill when it comes to qualifying. Since 08, we've had a lot of changes. The government stepped in a big way in 2010. They came out with the Dodd-Frank Act, which has given a lot of changes to our industry in regards to qualifications, some of the requirements that the lenders have to take on, which is more responsibility and more liability. Mainly, they are wanting more skin in the game from investors and from the originator for investment products. A good example is before 08, the brokerage community, a loan broker, which is an independent guy that could send loans anywhere he wanted to, have that particular lender underwrite it and close it in their name. They never had to close in the broker's name. So there really wasn't any skin in the game for the broker. So now, because of the government restraints requiring a certain asset base for these brokers, a lot of them can't afford it. And they're having to work for bigger banks or bigger corporations that have, you know, the asset base to be a correspondent lender. So the brokerage piece went from probably 70% of the originating community down to about 4% today, which is quite a change. So most of the originators that are still left on the playing field, they've gone to work for correspondent lenders and or banks. And, you know, a lot of the banks are still a little reserved on how they do loans. A good example is in 2008, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac allowed to the lenders to take their borrowers up to 10 loans. Once the knee jerk came around, they both adjusted that down to 4. And then when that happened, probably 8 months later, Fannie Mae stepped up and says, you know, that's probably a bad move. Let's take it back to 10. So they're the only ones that took it back to 10. Freddie Mac did not. So because of that, a lot of the banks, being that they want to deliver to both buckets, they only want to take the lowest denominator, which is 4. And they don't want to go beyond that. So your hybrid lenders like ourselves and other main lenders in the marketplace, they are supporting these products that take loans up to 10, which means they're, you know, directly delivering these notes to Fannie Mae, which is a good thing. It's a very good thing.
Well, and let's talk about that, because there's obviously limits that lenders want to see when it comes to how many loans a borrower has in their name. And the theory is the more loans you have, the less likely it is that perhaps you'll pay them back. We could make the argument the other way, but it's definitely proven in their numbers, in their system, that after a certain number of loans, that lender may become more risky. So the idea of getting 1 to 4 loans, we're talking about 4 loans on 4 different properties, including your personal residence.
Right.
And up to 3 other properties that could be rental properties.
Correct.
Once we buy our 5th property, now the qualification changes a little bit.
Correct. From 1 to 4, like a single family residence, you can do 20% down with a credit score even down to 620. And the reserve requirements are only for the subject property and very little for any other properties that are owned. Now, when you go to the 5 to 10 category, the credit requirements go to 720. The single family residence goes to 25% down. And they do have to have 6 months reserves on all properties owned. That's principal, interest, tax, insurance. So, you know, the reserve requirements a lot of times is what gets a lot of the investors. Now, we can use non-liquid funds for reserves as long as we can show proof of liquidation and we give a certain percentage of those liquid funds. But a lot of lenders, they just don't want to use this program because it's such a high-risk program.
So let's talk about what some of those, are they non-liquid funds? What do those look like? What are some of those kinds of funds that you could use?
Yeah, your non-liquid funds like your IRA, the things that are tax sheltered, your IRAs, 401ks, anything that you can't get to without penalty. Liquid funds, you know, checking, savings, brokerage accounts, mutual funds, things that are accessible today to liquidate tomorrow, okay, without any penalties. It's not to say that you can't use your 401k for a transaction, but needless to say, you're going to take a shot in the arm for penalties, which a lot of investors don't work. Before the market fell in 2008, a lot of the lenders, because of the values of their home, were taking out HELOCs on their primary residences. And a lot of times I get that question, can I use my HELOC for down payment and closing? Absolutely, because it's a secured loan. The HELOC is secured against a residence, which means you're tapping into your equity. Whereas if you went to a bank and got an unsecured loan, well, that's a true loan. It's not your equity. So you can use HELOC funds, and I see that, you know, being utilized a lot.
All right, good stuff. So knowing that we have a lot of listeners who have already been through the process of getting a loan, but maybe not recently, so that's changed. And there's a lot of listeners that are just thinking about investing in real estate. Let's talk about the differences between a loan I might get for a residence that I'm going to live in and an investor loan. If I'm buying a rental property, it's 100% non-owner occupant. I'm going to have a tenant in it. I'm going to hold it long-term. What does that loan look like?
Really, the underwriting process is about the same. Even since 2008, we're still focusing on the basics. Three categories: your credit, your collateral, which of course is the property, and of course, you know, how much do you have in the bank and your capacity. Okay. Capacity means can you afford the property as far as earnings and do you have the money to put down? And those three categories have not basically left the playing field. Now, what has changed is that they're more critical on validating the information. We've gone from a streamlined category to a fully documented category. And this year, since the last shoe of the Dodd-Frank Act went into place in January, to a overly documented world, which means we're asking for things that, you know, buyers are scratching their head. Why are you asking for this? Because the investor community that are buying these loans, they want to see them. It's not that a primary residence loan is more critical or more difficult than a investor loan. It's just that investor loan underwriters look at them initially as a hot potato because the investment loan category was one of the top categories that had a lot of fraudulent activity.
Sure.
So we don't necessarily view them as a hot potato. We embrace them as a company, which is good because it makes my job a lot easier. From the standpoint of earnings, a lot of times people say, okay, well, I have so much earnings. Can I qualify? Well, it's all numbers. And if we're short of earnings, then we'll give them back income on the property that they're buying. Okay. As before, a lot of lenders wouldn't do that. And there's even some lenders today that won't do it until they're 2 years seasoned, which means they have been a landlord for 2 years to give that income back even on the tax returns. We actually go for 1 year where we're giving that income back. And even on the subject property, we're giving income on the subject property if we get the appraisal right with the earnings piece that it's attached.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because obviously the appraisal is going to come out and verify the value, but if it's an income property and we're relying on the rents, obviously the investor is, whether or not it counts against their qualification or for their qualification, they're certainly interested in what the rents are. The appraisal is going to come back with what market rents will be in the area as well as the value. What's the appraisal process look like today?
The appraisal process is a little more critical because, you know, they're being scrutinized just like the lenders are. They want to make sure that their information is not only correct, but they also have to adhere to whatever the lenders are requiring. I mean, yes, are we seeing appraisals go back to the appraiser and say, we need you to fix this or pick up another comp or justify this comp or justify this? Yeah, that happens every day, not only non-owner occupied, but on all appraisals. But as far as the income piece, yeah, if for some reason somebody's buying a distressed property and it's that we come back with an as-is property, okay? And the as-is property is validating the value of the property, but it's also validating what that particular property will earn as far as average market rent. And if they don't have a lease on the property, then we use that figure to put back into the underwriting piece so they can offset the liability.
If they buy a property that's got an existing tenant and there's a lease in place, does that make it any stronger or does that matter?
No, it's the same way. As an example, if you're getting it close to 1% on the purchase, which means that if you've got a, say, $100,000 sales price and you've got the market rent analysis that comes back in on the appraisal at $1,000, then you've adhered to that 1%. And typically most investors that are selling these properties have already adhered to that 1%, which they have that lease in there for $1,000 or more. Either way we look at it, we're going to give them 75% of whatever the gross rent is. If the rent is $1,000, we're going to give them back credit of $750. If you're buying it right and buying it at 1%, that typically will offset the full liability, principal, interest, tax, and insurance, and hopefully a lot of times come out with a little plus, ahead.
Now, if you're in a market where the prices are increasing, that generally is a favorable thing, right? That's part of why you may be buying. But then you have the issue that the appraiser's comps may be the trailing comps. So you talked about providing additional information. How often does an appraisal come in where you have to help out, provide some additional consideration for what the comps they might want to use?
Well, I'm going to speak for the industry right now. The industry itself, because of the HVCC rule that went into place a few years back, it's very difficult for us to have any influence on the appraisal, who we get the appraiser to do, so forth and so on, where we have our own in-house appraisal company. And every lender has to use either their own in-house company or an independent third party that has to adhere to a rotary dial system. If there's five guys in this particular zip code, then they rotary dial whoever gets the appraisal. It is what it is. We as a company use the same method. We don't even know who the appraiser is until the appraisal report gets back. If the appraisal report comes back and it does not hit sales price, we have a form that it can be filled out by the agent to miss any comps that the appraiser might have missed. It's a reconsideration of value, and we'll send it back to the appraiser for them to reconsider. And appraisers are human just like everyone else. If they miss a comp or they miss something that potentially the listing agent knew about that they couldn't find in MLS, well, then that's some good value that they can bring to the party. So yes, from time to time, we have some reconsiderations of value that do come out in the favor of the borrower. But keep in mind, appraisers feel like they want to provide their best foot forward every time. Some will be a little more lenient of adhering to a reconsideration. Some may not. It just depends on the appraiser.
All right, good stuff. Now let's talk about the idea of getting ready to make an offer on a property. If someone out there is listening and they're new to investment property, maybe they own a house, but they've not bought an investment property before, you're going to sit down with somebody and look at their file. You need to know everything about them. What are the landmines there, the things that come up for you often that you see that the borrower had no idea that it existed? What I'm getting at is, are there some things that people can proactively take care of before they're ready to buy?
One of the things that we see a lot on credit reports is that they may have had some arguments with a trade line, whether it be a Sears or some kind of credit card or some kind of reporting entity that is reporting incorrectly and say they owe money or whatever, and they're disputing that with the creditor, okay? And let's say they disputed that and they've got a resolution to the dispute, but on the credit report it still shows in a dispute form.
Yep.
Fannie Mae is one of the ones that is pretty hard on this, and if there's anything that's in dispute, it has to come out of dispute. And you don't know that until you pull the credit, and a lot of times the consumer doesn't know that either. That's some of the obstacles that we run into that are unexpected. The other ones are is they think that they can use monies that are being given to them from their parents or some other party that's not a part of the transaction. These are referred to as gift funds. Gift funds are utilized for primary residence only. They're not utilized for the non-owner-occupied transaction. Any funds that they're going to use has to be in their name. And where I run into this is there's a lot of times investors will go to some type of schooling or being advised from an accountant or an attorney saying, you have to set this thing up as an LLC because you're running it as a business. Go ahead and set up an account, put all your money into that LLC account, and then you can use that for the business. Well, being that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will not allow for entity vesting. Entity vesting means that it will now allow for LLCs, LPs, S-Corps, anything other than your name or a family trust, revocable trust. So here's all their money into this LLC account. They have not enough money in their personal accounts to justify the transaction. So there's a lot of hoops that we can jump through, and we've been pretty successful, satisfying that, but it's going to require more paperwork. If I could tell anybody out there right now, when you set up an LLC, call me first.
That's such good advice. Yeah. You know, who talks about setting up an LLC? Obviously, attorneys are concerned about right. not only asset protection, but also making sure that they're keeping their business activity separate from their personal activity for all kinds of liability reasons. But at the same time, the lender has to be in the loop because right. lenders don't want to make loans to entities. They make loans to people. So this is an important part. You know, we've obviously talked on the show about asset protection. A lot of folks who listen to the program have various LLCs for their properties. Just understand that you want to work hand in hand with your lender before you decide how you're going to vest title and those things.
Yeah, and keep in mind, people are always asking about LLCs. I hear it all the time. And we as a lender will not lend to an entity that's in, you know, LLC or so forth. So we lend to only the personal or the people that are in the loan transaction itself. And then they come to me and say, well, can I retitle it after closing? Well, you can. You can do whatever you want after closing. It's up to you. I cannot promote that activity only because I'm a lender. And as a lender, every promulgated note that we have has a thing called a due on sale clause.
Yep.
And the due on sale clause can be exercised by the lender if you take your entitlement from the personal name into an LLC or another type of entity because you are transferring the title. Now, have I ever seen that taking place? Not in the 15 years that I've been on board, but if you want to pick up the phone and call the servicer and say, guess what I'm doing? You know, then you're subject to having that happen.
Absolutely. And this is part of your big picture when it comes to planning out your investment activity. As you get more and more properties, certainly commercial loans can often be made to entities. At some point, you're not going to have your personal name on everything that you do. But when you start off in single family homes, it's one of the realities is that lenders make loans to people. And let's talk about that credit side. How early should they check their credit? You know, you certainly don't want to see somebody get into contract who hasn't taken a look at their credit yet.
Right.
When do you guys run credit and how does that work?
Well, I advise all borrowers as well as real estate agents that are working with these clients to have them pre-approved. Why go through the exercise of going through the contract, writing the earnest money, get it into escrow to find out you can't close the loan? It's always good to have a pre-approval done, you know, at least 2 or 3 weeks beforehand. So if there's any problems or any things like these authorization or the disputed accounts that may need to be removed, well, this stuff takes time. So you want to try to do it a couple weeks ahead of time. We pull the credit once. The credit itself is good for 75 days.
Okay.
If you close on the loan between when we pull it through a pre-approval process up until the day of closing of 75 days, we won't pull your credit again. So that's a good thing. This is where it was notorious when brokers did it because they're shooting these loans all over, you know, town, and there's so many people that are pulling the credit. We don't do that.
That's important consideration for sure. So, Graham, how big of a geographic area do you guys cover?
Well, we as a company, we're in about 23 states, and don't hold me to that because it changes. I represent the state of Texas. I do some loans in Tennessee as well. We are governed by the SML, which is we're not a nationally chartered thrift like a bank. Okay, they're a nationally chartered thrift. They can do loans in pretty much most 50 states. We do loans in all the states that we are currently have bricks and mortar in. We're very heavily focused on the West Coast, a lot of the mountain states west. Being that we're based out of Denver, we have a lot of activity in Colorado, California, although we're up in Michigan, Minnesota, Florida, I believe in New Jersey. We are represented about, I think we're probably ranked number 15th in the nation, and that's compared to the big boys as well as the national lenders. So we do pretty good volume. We did about, I'm going to guess, $6.5-7 billion last year, and we're looking to do similar to that this year, I hope. Once again, I represent just mainly the state of Texas, work with investors all over the state. So if you're looking in Houston, Austin, San Antonio, Dallas, I mean, I can help you anywhere.
And how many of your buyers are from Texas?
Good question. Less than 5%. Yeah, less than 5%. Some are international. Some are mostly scattered all over the country. A lot from the West Coast. As for some crazy reason, the guys on the West Coast, they don't even think twice. They just do it. And I think we overanalyze it here in Texas. It's just the way Texans are. But yeah, probably less than 5% in here.
All right, good stuff. Well, if it sounds like Graham knows a lot about investment properties because he's literally written the book on it. He's got a brand new book coming out called How to Get Loans for Investment Properties. And before we're done, we're going to tell the folks how they're going to be able to pre-order a copy of it for free. It's going to come out after the first of the year. Tell us about the book. What's in the book?
Well, we're kind of touching on a lot of the nerves that borrowers go through to get loans. In today's world, it is a little more painful than it has been in the past. There's a lot of mistakes that can be made, which we've touched on a few, and there's a lot of obstacles that people don't see coming. In addition to, well, why can't I do this or why can't I do this? Well, here's why. And it's not us. It's the investment community that are buying these notes, and they're very critical on everything that we do. So this book is really kind of a more of a helpful tool to say, okay, I'm trying to want to be an investor. I want to get prepared. I want to get pre-approved. Reading this book will help you out significantly because it's going to generate a lot of questions in your mind. For me, hey, I read your book. Can I do this? Can I do that? Should I be doing this or should I be doing that? And that helps not only the process, but it gives them a little bit greater peace of mind when they go to do the transaction.
Yeah, it brings up such an important point, which is we talk about investors. In our terminology, the investor is the person who's buying the property. In the lending terminology, investors are the folks providing the money. So when we say the term investor, it can change. People think, well, the lender is looking for reasons not to lend to me. The person that you're dealing with, your job is to help people get the loan, not to keep people from getting the loan.
Yeah, I tell borrowers up front, you and I are going to write a book. There's some chapters in there that we may not put in there. There's some additional chapters that I want to put in there. It's really up to me to determine that because I kind of think I know what these underwriters are looking for. Okay. Am I going to be successful at that every time? Not necessarily, because there's going to be a lot of steps along the process where they're going to be touching this file with different opinions. I'm going to look at it and say, okay, this is what I need from you based upon what you've told me about you. Then I get the information. I give it off to the processor. Processor, they'll review it and they'll say, okay, I think we missed this predicated on the way I see this file and the way the underwriter is going to want to see it. I think we're going to need some additional information, Mr. Borrower. Underwriter gets it. They review the file. They approve it. And they're going to come back and say, it's conditionally approved, but we're going to need some more information. And that's the thing that's the most frustrating with all borrowers, because it's not like it was in the good old days where limited paperwork would fly right through. There's no hassle, no muss, no fuss. It's just the way it is. And sometimes I think, is it our company that's doing that? And I reach out to a lot of my competitors, the friendly competitors of really good companies, and say, are you going through the same thing? And they are.
Yeah.
So it's not just us. It's the whole lending community.
Well, and it does shift over time. And that's, I think there's a lot of argument to be made that the prudent lending practice we're seeing today makes a lot of sense. People ought to have more than a heartbeat and a signature to get a loan. But knowing that going in, people just need to have a little more patience, have that deep breath. One of the great things about investment properties, it's not like with your home, I've got to move in before the school year starts or the clock is ticking, whatever that is. Investors, we'd like to have the property sooner, but if it takes an extra month to get into it, let's do it right and make sure we get the job done.
And that happens quite often. I used to be called the king of roll. And what that means, okay, the closing date was missed. We're going to roll until the next day or whatever. And a lot of times that happens on rehabilitated homes. With the turnkey providers, a lot of times they don't know when that rehabilitation is going to be completed. They have a target date. They could run into all kinds of different obstacles where that date could be shifted back a week, whatever the case. So that's where if we miss close dates, it's primarily because of the rehab only. But yeah, they're not as anxious. They're not sitting out in the parking lot of the title company with a van full of their furniture ready to go.
Right.
Hey, if I don't close Friday, Monday's just as good.
All right, good stuff. Hey, before we're done today, you're going to get all the information on how you get a copy of Graham's book. It's called How to Get Loans for Investment Properties. He's been kind enough to make that available to our listeners at no charge. It's going to come out after the first of the year, and you'll be on the list to get it first. Information on that before we're done. Hey, Graham, thanks so much for great information today. It's been great to catch up with you.
Thank you, Robert.
You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. We come back more about the lending world, and we'll play real estate trivia, and you can win a prize next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
If you've been listening to the Real Estate Guys for a while, then you've heard about the legendary Investor Summit. Simply put, it's the highest level event we do, and the content, faculty, and attendees are amazing. If you're serious about taking your real estate investment to the next level, consider joining us. You'll spend an entire week with like-minded investors, world-class educators, and real-world professionals, and you'll have a blast. Join Peter Schiff, Ken McElroy, Tom Hopkins, and the Real Estate Guys for the 13th Annual Investor Summit at Sea. It all begins March 5th, 2015 in Miami, Florida. Visit realestateguysradio.com and click the tab that says Summit to learn more and reserve your spot. The event is more than 80% sold out, so make plans to join us. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click Summit and spend a week with the Real Estate Guys and an all-star faculty on the 13th Annual Investor Summit. Don't miss the boat.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe of Paradigm Life. Over the last few years, I've had the privilege of sharing the services of Paradigm Life with you loyal Real Estate Guys Radio listeners through our website, www.beyourbank.com, and also on the annual Investor Summit at Sea. Subsequently, we have seen a variety of financial situations across the socioeconomic spectrum and how everyone, regardless of their situation, would improve their financial lives by following the system we specialize in. As a result of this experience, we have created an online e-learning system so anyone without obligation can learn about the infinite banking concept. This free e-learning program is found on our website, www.beyourbank.com. So check it out today. The website again is www.beyourbank.com.
Hi, I'm G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, a second look at the Federal Reserve. You're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. We're glad you're here. We're talking today about the lending landscape, what's happening in residential and commercial financing. Before we get to our commercial lender, let's play Real Estate Trivia, your chance to win a prize by knowing today's Real Estate Trivia question. In just a minute, I'm going to ask you a question that has something to do with real estate. You're going to come up with the answer by sending us an email quickly to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Trivia@realestateguysradio.com. The first person with the right answer gets a copy of Dave Leniger's great book, My Next Step. He's the co-founder of RE/MAX, and he has an amazing story to tell you. Last week on The Real Estate Guys, we were deep in the heart of Texas, and we asked this. Lamar Hunt, founder of the American Football League and son of oil tycoon H.L. Hunt, was a noted Dallas resident when he coined what important sports phrase? The answer is, Lamar Hunt coined the phrase Super Bowl, which a few years ago was here in Dallas at the amazing Cowboys Stadium. In fact, my sons and I got to spend the night in Cowboys Stadium as part of the Cub Scout program just this last week. It was amazing stuff to wake up looking at the goalposts. Pretty cool stuff. Anyway, here's our real estate trivia question for this week. Where was the first movie theater in the United States? Yep, in what U.S. city was the first dedicated movie theater? If you know or want to take a guess, send us your answer to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Be sure to include your name and your physical mailing address because we're going to send you a copy of Dave Leniger's great book, My Next Step. If you're the winner, that's today's real estate trivia question. We're talking about an important element of real estate investing, that's financing. We've talked a little about residential financing and the State of the Union with Graham. Now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about commercial financing. Joining us, please welcome Mr. Michael Becker from Old Capital. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for taking time to give us the update here. Tell us about what's going on in the commercial financing arena.
Sure. The commercial space has definitely opened up over the last several years. It's not 2009 anymore. The lenders are more readily available and more aggressive in both their leverage and who they're loaning money to and the geographical areas they're loaning money in. So things are much, much better than they were several years ago.
Well, that has to be good news.
It is.
So let's talk about your specialty. You're in the apartment space, primarily in B and C apartments. And so that's a pretty active space. A lot of folks are interested in acquiring those units. What's a typical loan look like for you?
Sure. They kind of varies depending on the asset itself and your experience level. But generally speaking, you know, when in 2009, 2010, we're loaning money and lucky to get to 70% leverage. Now, you know, 75 and 80% leverage is very, very common.
Wow.
30-year amortizations is readily available out there on most assets. And, you know, the lenders are pretty aggressive and fixed rates are, you know, somewhere in the 4.5 to 5 range, depending on where, what you do.
Well, that all sounds pretty good. Let's talk about the idea of acquiring an apartment building. If you're out looking at an asset that's stabilized, that's going to look maybe different than if you're trying to acquire something that has some upside, right? As an investor, I might say, well, sure, this is a lot of vacancy or it needs a lot of work. What does the lending picture look like in those cases?
Sure. The more stabilized a property is, the better the leverage is going to be. So the lenders reserve the best quotes for the most stable properties. But there still are tons of lenders out there that are willing to loan on the value-add properties that need a massive deferred maintenance cured or, you know, are low in occupancy. So they're out there. You'd likely see the leverage cut back a little bit, potentially shorten the amortization period, and definitely would likely have to have a personal guarantee or some of the more stable assets. In some cases, you can do a non-recourse.
Now, with commercial, oftentimes there's a minimum loan amount because you're not going to want to go to all the trouble and work and heartache on a loan of a lower amount. What's kind of the range of loans that you guys do?
Sure. Yeah, we'll do anywhere from about $500,000 on the low end up to 20 or 25 million on the high end. With most of our loans, you know, two to $5 million range is where most of the space that we play in.
Okay. Let's talk also geography. You guys work a fairly wide range. The company's based in Texas. Talk about kind of the areas you guys do financing in.
Sure. We're based in Texas and Dallas, and most of what we do is in the Texas market, but I just closed a deal in Jacksonville, Florida, you know, 30 days ago. So we'll go nationwide. And, you know, we specialize in apartment complexes. We'll do other asset classes. We'll do office buildings. We'll do retail, industrial, and some construction lending as well.
Well, that's interesting because those are very different areas when it comes to investing. And I think most of our listeners are probably accomplished in single family, certainly looking to multifamily. But there are definitely some that are looking at development, construction, and so on. So I know that's not the area you specialize in, but what are those kind of loans, the availability of those kind of loans look like today?
They're much better than they were before, but the lenders have taken some lessons from the past, and they do want to make sure that you have a plan in place and you have the team in place to be able to do all the both the horizontal and the vertical construction, and that you have an idea and you know what you're doing. You're not just out there winging it. So they're definitely going to take a little bit more thorough due diligence than maybe they did in the last cycle.
Michael, we met at our Secrets of Successful Syndication event, and you, in fact, are a successful syndicator in addition to obviously working at Old Capital and doing lending. Talk about that side of what you've been doing in the apartment space.
Sure. I own about 1,400 apartment units in the DFW area with some investors, and we target B and C class multifamily that have a little light value add. We're not looking for the really deep distressed stuff, but something that's just not working as well as it should, and we come in and, you know, fix it up, make it a little nicer, and, you know, make it work a little bit better.
Now, it would seem to me that in many markets, that is getting tighter and tighter from what I hear from our friends who are doing these kinds of apartment projects, whether they're just in the business of buying or they're syndicating deals, is that there's more competition for that product today.
That is very, very true. We're having to work much harder today than we did 2 years ago to try to find the same rate of return. In a lot of cases, is not out there. So we really, really have to work 2, 3, 4 times as hard as we did, you know, a few years ago to find the right deal, not just, you know, the overpriced deal.
You know, real estate cycles are always interesting to watch, right? Back in 2009, you could buy a lot of stuff. You just couldn't get it financed.
Sure.
Today, as we're learning, the financing is there. The challenge is to get the deal.
And the financing also obviously drives the prices up as well. But there are deals out there, and if you're disciplined and you look hard enough, that you should certainly be able to locate something. In my market, I'm pretty bullish about the opportunity and the income and the job growth and all that we have here in the DFW market. Is really helping support the prices, and they're real. It's not some smoke and mirrors. The drivers are there that are helping the prices go up.
You know, we've been talking about that on the show, the fact that a lot of the single family market has been, well, we'll call it smoke and mirrors, but not actual mom and pops getting up, going to work and taking their income and buying houses as much as investors and funds. In the apartment space, you see the professional investor. It's usually not a mom and pop buying 100 units. It usually is someone that has a more professional background, and maybe they haven't done multifamily before, but they've certainly been in real estate before. So how does that translate into how the whole loan process looks?
Sure. One of the key components all the lenders look at are who's standing behind the deal, who's running the deal. So the background and the experience is definitely part of it. Everyone has to start somewhere. So a lot of people, if someone has to loan you your first loan to buy an apartment complex or an office building or whatever it is. So one of the things that, you know, certainly helps with that is your personal balance sheet. and making sure you have enough financial strength behind you and that you have the right third-party management in place to kind of help overcome your lack of experience to have a third-party management company. That's one of the key elements a lot of the lenders look at when they're making their credit decision.
Well, now, since you've been in the business a while and been in the financing business as well as in the owning business, right, we're seeing this now shift where a few years ago, pretty much any loan on an apartment was a government type of loan, and now there's different sources for that. Who's coming into the market? Who do you see supplying capital out there?
Yeah, you definitely have the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac out there, but your regional banks, your national banks, your community banks are all lending, as well as life companies and the CMBS or commercial mortgage-backed securities. They're back in a big way, and they're loaning a lot of money, as well as there's a lot of private money and quasi hedge funds out there loaning money at the same time. So there's a lot more abundance of lenders out there than they definitely was, you know, in 2009.
All right. Well, good stuff. This is a great overview. I know that you could go on and on and on, which is why we're going to make sure we get you back on the show and talk in more detail, because a lot of folks are interested in the commercial side of the business, and I think you'll be a great resource for that. So thanks for your time today.
Appreciate it.
All right. Good stuff. That's Michael Becker. More when we come back, talking financing today on The Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Dennis.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms, and if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits, the beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforests, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. And why U.S. real estate continues to drop, Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Are you still sitting on the sidelines trying to figure out when and where you're going to buy those investment properties? Well, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Atlanta, Georgia is still on sale, but you better act fast because the deals are almost gone. Hey, this is Ken Corsini with Georgia Residential Partners, and I want you to know that there may not be a better investing opportunity than Atlanta right now. Listed as one of the fastest growing markets in the country, both in terms of jobs and population, Forbes predicts 26% appreciation over the next 3 years. At Georgia Residential Partners, we sell turnkey, cash-flowing investment properties. We also sell wholesale properties at insane discounts. We're launching a new home construction product this summer as well, and if you're still nervous about stepping out into another market, I will personally partner with you on a small portfolio of homes, if that's what it takes. Don't wait any longer. Check us out at gainvesting.com or call our office at 770-924-5450. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hi, this is Anthony Melchiori from Hotel Impossible, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
And welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, the number one downloaded podcast on real estate investing. Hopefully, you're learning something today about lending. I know I did.
Yeah, I think one of the first and most important things that, you know, most real estate investors need to understand is the terminology, the difference between residential and commercial.
Yeah.
And that's why we had both on today, because you might think that commercial means I'm buying an office building or an industrial complex, but you can get five residential units and up, and that's commercial.
Yeah.
And it's handled in a very different fashion than the residential 1-4, mostly because of the impact of the GSEs, the Fannie, the Freddie, and the government backing, which is really designed to create small residential housing. And so because of the government's backing there, those interest rates are typically better. The process is a little bit more cumbersome, but it kind of sets the tone for what goes on. So you're going to need both people in your power Rolodex. That's the point, because My experience has been, and I spent most of my time when I was in the business on the residential 1-4 side, we had other people that did the commercial side. They're two very different disciplines. And so it's important for you to understand the differences. And then when you decide to make the shift, you may have to reevaluate who's on your team or add people to your team to make sure you've got the right people. In this case, you just heard from two guys that cover both bases.
I think it's great just to think about the fact that you need to put the right person in the right position. I can remember years ago when we were looking for leased space before we bought our big building, we were looking for a space to lease. And we met with one of the top leasing brokers in the area. And his thing was like, oh, hey, guys, what's going on in the housing market? I mean, what's happening in investing? Like, he was clueless about our part of the business, but he knew everything about his part of the business.
Well, even like Michael was talking about, you know, what his core business is versus some things that they're involved in versus other things they don't do at all and they have to refer out. I think that when you meet a lawyer or a doctor or any professional who says, yes, I can do it all. I can do brain surgery. I can remove your tooth. I can fix your eyes and I can handle your ingrown toenail. I'm running, right? Because this guy doesn't, you know, he's not.
Oh, you need brain surgery?
He's not a specialist, right? The same thing is true. If I hear, you know, a real estate agent tell me, you know, pretty much anywhere on planet Earth I can represent you, no thank you, yeah. Right? And if I hear a lawyer tell me he can do whatever, you kind of get the point. So I think part of the interview process is asking guys to be honest about what's their sweet spot. So don't feel badly if you have to have three or four different people on your team just in the lending space, depending on what you're doing. But with that said, you also need to be very cautious about trying to be all things, right? Pick something, get it down, get really good at it, and then if you want to pick up something else, do that based on the strength of what you've already accomplished, you know, and while you're feeling your way and trying to figure out what your niche is going to be. Sometimes you may go based on what the market is giving you, what the opportunities and the relationships you have are giving you, and who's on your team, and you may decide to specialize in something that you might not have otherwise considered. We certainly have had that happen. We go along thinking we're doing this, and then we study a market just kind of curiosity, and it looks good, and we get closer and closer and closer to it. All of a sudden, that's our niche. That's what we want to do. So there's nothing wrong with that being exploratory, but just understand how the team fits in, and that coming back to the theme of financing, how the lending world is specialized. And so the people who are actually underwriting the loans, not the people at the front end who are doing the origination, the people you're working with, but even the people behind them are specialized. And so you want to learn how to understand how you have to package up your financing, what your balance sheet needs to look like, if your credit score needs to be something, what it needs to look like, the difference between recourse, non-recourse, and just a lot of the tactical details will help you figure out who your partners need to be. A lot will pivot off the lender because the lender is going to be the source of the bulk of the money in the transaction. You have to understand what the lenders are thinking.
And loan programs change all the time, just like interest rates. So just because this show may be current this week, if you're listening a year later, then maybe not, right? That's why you want to have a person on your team that you can go to say, hey, what's it going to look like today? And again, investors have an advantage. So many homeowners get all enamored with the property. They're all about the house, and then they go get the loan. Best way to shop for even a house is to first get pre-qualified with a lender, understand what you really can afford, and now you are in a position to go get the right property. As a real estate investor, you're not usually under the gun to pull the trigger this minute. You're not worrying about putting a roof over your kids' heads. It's over your tenants' heads. So you can be more strategic about it, and you need to be in this business. So we're going to do our best to bring you more up-to-date loan information than we have in the past, because this is kind of an area we've not been bringing you a lot of content in, but we were happy, very happy to have Graham and Michael on the program today. So good stuff there. Hey, if you want a free copy of Graham's brand new book, How to Get Loans for Investment Properties, it comes out after the first of the year, but you can get your name on the list so you get a copy for free when it comes out. Simply send an email to loansecrets@realestateguysradio.com. That's loansecrets@realestateguysradio.com. It's the most wonderful time of the year. We've got some great shows coming up the rest of this year and even more next year. Until next week, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton.
find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.